Hey friends, this is Life After College, and I'm Coach Brigana. I'm here to inspire you to level up, empowering you to rise to new heights on your journey as you create the success you've always dreamed of. Let's dive in. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Life After College. This week we have another guest on the show, Dr. Sherry Maya. We're going to be digging into college success, but from the perspective of a college administrator and someone who has a passion for education and seeing students succeed through any circumstances. I had the pleasure of working with Dr. Maya when I was a student success coach at DeVry University, and I'm excited to have her on the podcast today. A little bit about Dr. Maya. She is the Dean of Academic and Workforce Operations at Germana Community College. She is a passionate advocate for community education and the role that education plays in improving the lives of students and the overall health of the community. She served honorably in the United States Army for 6 years and then was a military spouse. After leaving the Army, Sherry pursued higher education and has a bachelor's and master's degree in business, a professional accounting certificate, education specialist degree, and completed her doctorate of education in November of 2023. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Brianna.
So, you've been in education for quite some time, and both as a student and on the administrative side. So, you have like a wealth of knowledge.
I have. Actually, it feels like I've been in education forever. And about 20 years, it seems like I've been going to college in one facet or another, but I've been fortunate to also be working in higher education for all of that time as well. So I've been doing it for a while.
Constant learner, mm-hmm. A forever learner. So you work within a community college. I mentioned we worked at DeVry together, which was a university, a non-traditional university. Well, non-traditional students went there. And so just given your experience from the administrative perspective, what are some major struggles that you see students dealing with? And what are some ways that they can overcome those things?
So I think that probably the biggest struggle that I see is actually understanding and navigating through college. It certainly is not the same college that our grandparents went to. It's not the same process. It's not the same way that we talk about even what the overall experience is going to be. And I think one of the things that I've been most interested in and worked the hardest on is understanding all of the barriers that happen outside of the classroom. I think that there's a large perception that the hardest part about going to college is math or English or writing papers, but unfortunately it's not. It's actually getting there, understanding how to get through the admissions process, and then being able to put all of the things that happen to students outside of the classroom aside while they actually do the coursework. I mean, I think both at DeVry and now particularly at Germana Community College, which is where I work, the faculty inside the classrooms are doing an amazing job of getting students through the classes, facilitating the learning, and making an environment for success. But it's everything that happens outside of that. And it's not being able to pay for gas to get to college, not being able to afford the internet, not being in a place where broadband internet is necessarily available. So online options are cut down significantly. We have students who are trying to type their papers on their phones. We have them joining classrooms from McDonald's. It is just a challenging time to be a student.
Yeah, you know, you're definitely right. Things are for sure different from even when I was in college. I would also say the pandemic mm-hmm. changed a lot of things. And I also feel that we're so fortunate to have internet and to have Wi-Fi that it's something sometimes that you don't even think of that maybe others don't have access to. Mm-hmm. And especially being a college student, and now the world of education is online, mm-hmm. all the more then there is that challenge. What are there resources within a college or university that can help? Or what resources have you noticed that maybe other people aren't aware of that can help with that?
So we actually, during the pandemic's a primary example, one thing that we learned very quickly is that you can provide student services online. And I think that was a really big misperception before, that all students had to be served in person, in an office, you know, one-on-one with an advisor. We realized that group advising can work. We also, in terms of how we dealt with the broadband issue, is and they still exist, is we put hotspots inside or in our parking lots. So if a student could just make it to the college, they were able to log in and access the internet. Clearly not as good as if they were inside the buildings or had good access to internet at home, but certainly some options. I've seen college administrations just become super flexible with funding hotspots for students to take home, for paying for internet access as part of the work we do to wrap services around students. It is almost impossible to be a college student now and not have adequate access, because even those classes that are traditional and in the classroom almost always have an online component, even if all it is to turn in the work. So zero access to internet and technology pretty much means zero access to college at this point. So that's a significant factor that we've had to overcome. And then I think there are a lot of grants and initiatives in Congress, in the state legislatures, that are trying to address equal access to broadband. And I think that as that improves, we'll see more and more access. But what is really hopeful to me is that we have seen students from areas where we haven't traditionally been able to serve them. And that's an important growth area in higher education.
Definitely. So in thinking, or we talked about some challenges that are present with students and their struggles that they have, I'd like to shift to incoming freshmen. You talked a lot about, you know, we think about all the classes are going to be hard, or you also talked about the admissions process and things like that. But what is one thing an incoming freshman can do prior to starting college that will set them up for success? Maybe something that isn't necessarily talked about but should be known.
Mm-hmm. So I have a couple of thoughts about that. First of all, attend orientation in whatever format that you're able to do so, whether it's in person, which I think is preferable, so actually going to the college, but if not, then being online, because inside of those orientations are all of the resources or access to the resources that you're going to need to be successful. So take those seriously. It's not a throwaway activity. It's important to set you up for success. I think it's also important to listen to your advisor, whether that comes in the form of admissions coaches like we have at Germana, the navigators that they have at other colleges, the academic advisor or your first term advisor. Those are people who have the keys to unlock the doors to success. I always take my students through a tour through what I call the corridor of services, so that they understand that there is tutoring, there's financial aid advisors available, there are academic advisors, there are career coaches, there are many, many people set up to help them to be successful. So know your resources and go to orientation.
Definitely. We had a past episode, which I'll link it in our show notes, about resources and discovering what your resources are, just even outside of college. You yourself are a resource. And there's also a separate episode where I talked about every university, every college has a library and a resource center that's available with free resources to help and support you. You spoke about financial advisor, an academic admissions. You also talked about a career coach. These are all available to students, and I think it's so fantastic that you mentioned orientation. I remember we provided new students orientation at DeVry, and I mean, we even talked through their online learning platform and what to expect and how to navigate it. And being part of that, I would also say, helps to take the edge off and the fear, the overwhelm that I'm sure some freshmen have. And I love that you hit on orientation, because you don't want to miss out. It's free information, and it's there to help the students succeed. You mentioned about key resources that are available to the students. Are there any additional resources even outside of the college, university, that you would advise for students to tap into? I know that one online resource is like FastWeb, where you can look up grants and scholarships. Mm-hmm. Do you know of, or would you suggest any other resources that you can think of?
You know, I think I've been a big champion of understanding technology and using all of that. I think AI is absolutely a resource that college students can and should use. I don't mean it in terms of plagiarizing your papers or using AI to completely do your assignments. But one of the things that we're hearing from employers, and I would say pick a college that pays attention to what employers need. That if I had any other tip I could give to students, is really pick a college that is talking to employers. And it doesn't matter what format the college is or where you want to go, make sure they're paying attention to those needs. And so one of the things that we're doing right now with our advisory boards is talking about AI and what does it mean. And it's really easy to tell whether or not a student is using AI to write their papers. But what we're encouraging is that we have faculty who are incorporating it in the classroom to help students to be prepared to use it. Because that's what employers are talking about right now, is how can AI help us to make our jobs more efficient and effective? And how can we recruit employees who can utilize AI? So I would say that. On a more human level, though, I think find a mentor. And I don't believe that is only for your college experience. I have a very significant mentor in my life who has really kept me on track and kept me moving. And in days when I thought that my doctorate was completely out of reach, just reminded me, no, it's not. Keep moving. Take a break if you need to, but keep going. So finding someone who has been successful in whatever field that you want to go into, or at the college that you want to go into, or even just in life, whether you're connected to a church or a volunteer organization, I just find somebody who matters to you, who can remind you about what's important in all the days when it gets hard, because it's going to get hard. So I mentor people myself. I work with a program, Leadership Fredericksburg, where I'm mentoring a fellow who's a little bit earlier in her leadership journey. So that's what I would say. Take a look at AI. Ask AI what the best college would be for you, depending on where you want to go. Ask AI what the best program of study would be if you want to do this in the future. And it may not be right, but it'll at least give you some questions to get started with.
Oh, I love that you gave that perspective of AI, because I feel people are on the fence about it, or there's this, what's the word I'm looking for? Either people love it or they hate it, or they're like totally against it. Yes, polarizing.
But what it isn't is going away.
So true.
And so either we figure out how to incorporate it and make our students better because they use it, or we figure out how to catch them using it, mm-hmm. or we completely ignore it. But there's no way to get around it. I mean, even completely ignoring it's going to put you in a certain position in the future. So
true.
We're of the opinion right now in administration that we have to figure out how to use it to help our students be better.
Definitely. There's also, I think one piece, and this is slightly off track, but with AI, it's how you phrase or write a prompt is going to give you different results. And that in itself, I've already seen on LinkedIn Learn, they have training on how to write prompts, and there's prompt engineers. Like that's something for someone to take notice of, to keep track on. If that's something AI is of interest to you, you know, just have that on the back burner of where that's going. Also, AI is literally in everything. I mean, all over social media, you see all these different accounts of, hey, you can use AI to design your home. You know, you can use AI to help you with your editing a podcast. I mean, there's so many different ways that it's being infused into our society. And you're right, if we don't figure it out, be curious about it, definitely we'll get left behind. You did mention to utilize AI and ask the questions and about different colleges, but you did say to pick a college that is talking, pick a college that is talking to employers. And how, outside of AI, how would a student go about knowing that?
Well, one thing that I didn't realize until I became focused in this area is there are advisory boards for colleges who are interested in employer input. So check and see if the college has an advisory board. That's a fairly simple search. If you look in the back of many of the catalogs, there will be a list of the advisory boards. The employment outcomes for colleges are important. So we're all tracking it. We're being held accountable to it. So what are the outcomes that students are achieving after they leave your institution is something that we are cognizant of. So you can search online and find those results. So are students getting employment? Or for us at the community college, we kind of have two tracks. So we have students who are looking for employment, they're doing short-term programs, short-term certifications, critical in today's economy, but we also then have a track of students whose ultimate outcome is to move on to their four-year college of choice. So pay attention to what the colleges are reporting and reviewing as part of their outcomes.
Yes, that's sometimes I think it gets lost. It's like, go to college. But there's the after college, right? You're going to college to have a job, have a career. And so it's important that as a student, you don't just go to the college because your friends are going there. Mm-hmm. What do you want 5-10 years down the road? What life do you want? What does that look like?
Absolutely.
What type of lifestyle do you want to live? And then what kind of job do you want to have? And it's also okay if you just don't know going in. I think so much of college is a time to explore and to figure it out. And you may go in with one degree and come out leaving with something different.
Mm-hmm. Not only may you, but you probably will, frankly. Most people don't pick the degree right at first. One of the things that I've been very passionate about is really formalizing some pathways for students. So we do a lot of pathway work. And what that means is I need to maybe have a general idea of what I'd like to do. So ultimately, I want to run my own business. Well, that's okay, because even at the community college level, we have several different pathways that you could take to do that. And what we have really worked hard to do is make it so that those first few classes that you choose are not so high stakes. So if you got into a program and you did a Business 100 or Business 101 class that, you know, just, and then you realized, you know, nope, not going to do it, then you didn't lose anything, because then you take that course, you put in an elective in another program. So degree efficiency is important, but the effectiveness of the classes counting towards more than one pathway, I think, is equally as important. So, you know, even doctors don't start in the program of, I'm going to be a medical doctor. I mean, those programs don't really exist at the undergraduate level. There are some that make sense to take on your way. So making sure you have biology, making sure you have math. Yes, important for doctors. But actually, there is no single undergraduate degree that you must complete in order to be a doctor, or to be a lawyer, or to be a college professor, or to be any of those things. So I think that the work that we're doing in higher ed to build pathways towards fields rather than individual degree programs is important. And find a college that does that. And then I think find a college that speaks to you in values, in vision, in mission. Mm-hmm. Look up the values of the college. One thing I'm particularly proud of at my current college is that our value is to be an anti-racist institution. Not just to embrace diversity, which is very, very important, but to be anti-racist and to make choices in curriculum, programming, hiring, who and why our faculty are there is just important. But whatever that is for you, whatever it is that speaks to you, make sure the vision of your college matches.
Man, these are so good. I wish I had all this before I went into college. I definitely was lost, and I'm like, well, this degree sounds good, and I didn't really know, like, well, what would I do with the degree? I mean, it was business, but I just, I wasn't able to really put all the pieces together, such as you're saying, with a pathway of like, oh, if I do this, then I can do this and this and this. So that is so, so fantastic that you guys have that. You mentioned a doctorate and you have one yourself. So I want to go in that direction and speak to, what was it like for you, and what advice do you have for someone who's considering pursuing that?
So for me, my next level in my career requires a doctorate. I'm a dean, so in order, and actually many, many dean positions require them. So just kind of, if you're going to be in higher education at past a certain level, it's necessary. So then I had to figure out kind of what doctorate spoke to me. And I will tell you that I have pursued two. And the first one was a doctorate in business administration, which I have everything done except for the dissertation, because I thought maybe I'd like to teach in that field and I'd like to actually be a dean of business and kind of do that. I earned a graduate certificate in accounting, but quickly realized that that's not my passion. So the doctorate of business kind of fell to the wayside when I couldn't find the topic that mattered enough to me to spend years of my life researching it. So I guess my best advice would be, first of all, it's never too late. I earned my doctorate this year, and I am 48, or I will be. No, I am. I will be 49 this year. I earned it at 48. I earned it after a career, so a lot of time spent in the career, so I know that this is what I really want to do. And I focused on women in higher education leadership, and so that gave me a lot of ability to research barriers. Mm-hmm. Then ultimately helped me to figure out how to overcome them, both for myself and then to remove them for women who are going to come behind me and want to be in higher education leadership, which is still predominantly, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your perspective and what you're looking for in your college leader, it's predominantly white men. And right now, older white men. I will say we've made tons of strides. In fact, two of the people that I spoke to were were female presidents. One of them was African American, and To say that she's inspirational is just not even, those words don't even cover it. And she's a mentor. So her name is Dr. Brannon. If you ever are looking for someone to really talk to that understands how to overcome barriers, and how to be that person in the room that you would never doubt that she had a seat at the table. You take one look at her and not only know that she has a seat at the table, she probably built the table. She probably put the table in the room that she wanted it in. Anyway, her name is Dr. Porter Brannon, and she's currently a president in the Virginia Community College System. So looking for a mentor, she's fabulous. But what I would mostly say is, the topic of your dissertation is not your life's work, and remember that. Because what it is about is the persistence. So it's a demonstration of persistence, and it's a demonstration actually of humility. And you really are opening yourself up for critical review of your work. And you have to be willing to do that. And there were a few times when I got the feedback, and particularly in the literature review process of my paper, which shouldn't have been the hardest part, but for me it really was, because there was not a ton of literature out there that was very specific. There were times when I thought, there is no way I'm going to get this doctorate. There's just no way. I am not speaking to my chair the way that she needs to hear. I'm not speaking to my subject matter expert the way that she needed to hear it. And I just had to go back to the drawing board and keep rewriting, and it was disappointing. And at one point I said to my chair, I said, do you think that I am even going to earn this? And she said that she told me that she would be shocked if I did not, and to close it down for the day and then come back and look again. So I guess my biggest advice would be, pick something that you care about but is not your life's work, because it could be disheartening to get that torn apart many, many times. And then be sure that you're ready to persist, because it's a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of money to get through the doctorate.
Just hearing you speak of your experience and what your dissertation was on is inspiring. It's very inspiring. And I all the more am so happy you're on this podcast to share that and to share your leadership and how you are impacting higher education as a woman leader. That's so amazing. So I just want to acknowledge you in that, because I like hearing you, I have goosebumps, you know, and I think it's just so fantastic, your perspective of higher education, and you could see the passion that you have for the students and wanting them to succeed. I'll never forget working at DeVry. You had a motto, and it was find the right yes, and I've kept it with me. I say it all the time. I remember I even had an interview, and I used it on the interview, and I would like to hear kind of the backstory of, like, where did it come from and what does it mean to you, and do you still use that?
I do still use it every time I walk into a situation where I'm leading a new team, or if my team is starting to feel a little, you know, caught up in the hard parts of being in student service. I still use it, and I remind them of my motto, because my personal feeling is that if someone on my team makes a mistake, doesn't necessarily follow policy, doesn't follow the procedure, you know, things that, you know, could potentially get us in trouble. Like, there's no question that there are rules in higher ed that have to be followed. My first guiding question for how I will review what happened is, were you trying to find a solution for the student? And if you are, if what you were working on as a student services professional working for me was in an effort to help the student, then I will support you and we'll find a way to get it there. So the backstory behind the find the right yes was, there's a question behind the question. So a QBQ leader, and his name is of course escaping me, and I should have got it because I knew you were going to ask me about it. But the idea within customer service in general, and like it or not, students are our customers. They're the most important consumer of higher education, and if we're not meeting their needs, then we're not serving them appropriately. And gone is the day where administrators can just say, well, if they want to go to this college, they're going to follow our rules and do what we tell them to do. It's not healthy because it doesn't foster independent thinking for students, and it doesn't help them to evolve into the citizens that we need. But you just won't have a college for very long if that is your approach, because students can get answers and help in seconds online now. So gone are those old days. So what I did was modify it, because I'm a registrar at heart, I always will be, and a registrar has to follow the rules, and we have to make sure the college follows the rules and the programs follow the rules. But those rules are sometimes wielded as a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
So, if a student doesn't meet a particular set of criteria, then they can't be here. They're not college material. They're not something. There's something missing in students, and I don't believe that there is ever something missing in a student. There may be something about the student that doesn't make them ready for the program right now, but I don't think there's anyone that cannot and should not be in college or in the program of their choice. It's just not always the one that they walked in the door and asked for. So the idea behind find the right yes. So his motto is kind of find the yes. If mm-hmm. you are in customer service, you need to find the yes for the client that you're working with or the customer. For me, I feel like you have to find the right yes. So if a student came to the community college today and they had not graduated from high school, they can take a test that demonstrates ability to benefit, and then they can take classes there. But that might not be the right yes for them. The right yes might be to take a step back or aside and get their GED.
Hmm.
Then come back, because if you understand financial aid, federal financial aid programs, you know that a student that has not completed high school is not eligible for financial aid. So even if they pass the ability to benefit test, they will be out of pocket. And without mm-hmm. any financial aid or scholarship, that makes it sometimes very unattainable for students. So the right yes for that student might not be to enroll them in a college program in that moment. The right yes might be to help them find the resources to get the GED done. And I think about that even in terms of a student who comes with a barrier in language. So they speak amazing Spanish or amazing Chinese, and they're brilliant, but they are not going to be successful in the classroom until we help with an intervention with English. So the right yes might be an ESL program to begin with, and then matriculating. And that's what I mean by find the right yes. I think there's a yes for everyone. There's a way to help anyone. It's just connecting them to the right resource at the right time. And I always think that there is the right program at the right time for the right student. And we have, as a college, have to be ready to connect the student that walks into our door to that. And not necessarily to, my mom said that I need to be an engineer.
Right.
Which is probably a great pathway for people who are very, very good at math. But I can find you another alternative that's going to meet your needs and get you to the same place. And that's it for me. It's just talking to the student. There is no one-size-fits-all college experience. There's no one-size-fits-all college.
So true.
That's it for me, and that's where it all came from.
Yeah, I've definitely used it throughout my career. Just anytime there is a challenge, I'm like, find the right yes. And or even to my boss, like, you don't want to tell them, no, we can't do that. It's, well, what can we do? I talk a lot on the podcast about getting curious. Being in, have a curious state of mind, asking questions, being open to things, as opposed to being in the box. And I think that's really what your motto is about, finding the right yes. It's, can we think outside the box? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to, maybe you came in and you thought it was going to look one way. Just like you even said with college, we go in expecting it to look a certain way, expecting to come out with a certain degree, and things shift. There's a lot of growth that happens while we're in college, no matter what age we go into college. My story is I was a very untraditional college student. I didn't go straight after high school. And no matter what age you are, what chapter you are in your life, there's always going to be a lot of growth that happens because it's a different experience. College is, it's different.
It sure is. I mean, I hope there's growth, because if there's not, why are you doing it?
Like, so true.
Yeah.
So true. Well, I want to thank you so much for being here and for sharing your stories, your advice. And I, like I said, I'm very, very inspired by you and your passion for higher education and our students. I know the work that you're doing and just who you are is having a ripple effect in our society. So kudos to you. Thank you so much.
I appreciate that.
I will have Sherry's bio in the show notes, as well as a way to connect with her on LinkedIn. We talked about it all. We talked about community college. We talked about incoming freshmen, what to do, and we even talked about doctorate degrees. We covered it all in this episode. I trust that you will find value in this. And if you want to dig in some more, you can reach out to me on social media at Next Level Bree. As I mentioned, you can connect with Sherry on LinkedIn, and I'm sure she would be happy to share more insight that she has. As I say, make it a good day, make it a good week, make good choices, and I'll talk to you soon. Thanks for joining me on another episode of Life After College. Be sure to stay up to date on all the latest episodes by subscribing. Want to connect? Reach out on Instagram and TikTok at Next Level Bree. And if you're ready to level up and want support on your journey to success, visit the contact page at coachbrianna.com. Thanks again for listening. Be sure to share and subscribe. And remember, you're in the driver's seat on your road to success.